You're listening to Underworld on the Ghost Radio Network.
Ghost Radio Australia.
Listen.
Portals. The unexplained. Synchronicity. EVP.
So why are you?
I heard that.
Absolutely fascinating.
What are Min-Min lights? Is it real? What do you think?
I love you.
The unseen.
I'm alright.
11-11.
Who or what are mutilating cattle?
Listen.
Poltergeists. Your stories. Your experiences. Listen close.
Tonight we are discussing global conspiracy with a man I've wanted to talk to for a very long time. Author and public speaker David Icke is my guest. Who and what is really controlling the world? Let's find out. A very big welcome to you, David Icke.
Thank you, Leah.
David, you've been called the most controversial speaker in the world. Do you wear this badge proudly?
Well, when I look at the world as it is, and where it seems to be acceptable to pepper bomb the most populated piece of land on the earth, like Gaza, and pepper bomb Baghdad and manipulate the money system so the purchasing power goes into the hands of the few and the rest have to get by on the crumbs. If anyone didn't think I was controversial, then I would be worried, really. It's like when people say you're crazy, and I think, well, thank you. Because if you considered me sane, and as you consider this system sane, then I would be worried. You know, it's something that is just said, but it's because of what I say, and I say what I say because I believe it to be true, and because I'm challenging a system which is insane from its perspective. You can be seen as extreme, but actually there's nothing more extreme than the system itself, which claims to be credible and just the cutting edge of human evolution.
Mm. I watched last night the documentary, Was David Icke Right? Which was a great documentary. You must have been pleased with the way it turned out, were you?
Yeah, I was, actually. And that's an interesting story because, if you keep speaking your truth and you don't bow to ridicule or dismissal or even people not listening for a while, then, I have this phrase, people can't unhear something. And that documentary actually came about because when I was speaking in the early days in the 90s, I couldn't fill a phone box. And I spoke in Belfast, Ireland, to literally a handful of people, and went home, really. And all those years later, one of the people in that audience in Belfast, the student, had become a television producer. And he had started to see, particularly since 9/11, that what I was talking about in that meeting in Belfast in the 90s about what the agenda was for the world was happening, and that's how that program came about. So, it's amazing if you keep speaking your truth how you can spark things off even in situations that seem in the experiencing of them to be quite, unsuccessful.
Mm. So are you starting to feel... is vindicated the right word, where a lot of what you've written in your book years ago, through your books, is now starting to become almost prophetic? I know you say it's not prophetic, as in, you receive this information kind of on an intuitive level. You kind of deciphered the patterns, didn't you, really?
Yeah, well, the thing is that what they call prophecy is merely predicting the future. I guess you can do this by sitting in a darkened room and accessing some other dimension where the future exists and put it that way. Or you can research how the world's controlled outside of how we're told it's controlled, who by, and to what end, and what that agenda quite simple. If the controlling network has an agenda for the world and nothing is done to stop that agenda happening, well, that agenda is going to happen. And so what I was doing in the 90s was uncovering this agenda, and it's got much deeper and deeper since then, but and writing about what the agenda was. And because nothing so far has happened to intervene, i.e. people waking up and saying we're not having it, nothing's happened to intervene to stop that agenda unfolding, so it's unfolded. So people read my books from years ago and then look at the world and they say, crikey, you know, he was predicting what was going to happen. What I was doing was saying what the agenda of this network is, and because that has unfolded, so it's unfolded out of the books and into the world. But it was hard research that brought that about.
Yeah. Can you tell me about one of my favorites of yours, which is the problem, reaction, solution that you talk about?
Yeah, this is a massively important thing for people to understand, because once you grasp it, and it's so simple, you see it playing out literally every day all over the world. It's a simple fact that this conspiracy wants to create a centralized global state. Again, it's simple mathematics, a simple equation. The more points of decision making there are in the world, the more people are making those decisions in their own communities, in their own countries, etc., the less control any centralized force is going to have. It's like being on a stage, as they used to do when I was a kid, and these type of acts where someone would keep plates spinning on sticks all over the stage.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, if you have too many plates and too many sticks, eventually the plates are going to start crashing. You can't keep control of them. So what you're looking for, really, ideally, symbolically, is one big plate and one big stick, because then from one point you can control the whole situation. So the agenda, key agenda coordinate, is they want a global centralized fascist state with a world government, a world central bank, for which there are massive implications in the economic situation going on now, which we can get into, a world currency, which eventually would be just electronic and no cash, no currencies except one electronic currency, a world army to impose the will of the world government on any country or region, as they really want it. They want to break up into regions that would not want to acquiesce to decisions of the world government, and a microchip population connected to the global positioning satellite and global computer system. Now that's where they want to go, among many other things. They want a global society, total surveillance and tracking of people's movements at all times, again electronically. So to bring that about, they have to somehow introduce those changes. Now, of course, if they were honest and they came out and said, okay, this is what we're going to do, then there'd be a massive reaction to that. People would say, we're not having it. So you don't obviously openly say where you're taking the world. You use two key techniques. One of them I called problem, reaction, solution, and the other one I called the totalitarian tiptoe. Problem, reaction, solution works by creating a problem covertly. In other words, the real cause of the problem is not revealed. It can be a run on a currency, it can be an economic crash, it can be a terrorist attack, it can be a war, it can be the ludicrously invented carbon dioxide causes global warming, all these things. And then you, through an unquestioning mainstream media, tell the people the version of that problem that you want them to believe. And you're looking at this stage two, the problem, the next stage, the reaction. You're looking for a reaction from the public of fear, of outrage, of something must be done, this can't go on, what are they going to do about it? And at that point, they go to stage three, where those who've covertly created the problem and blame someone or something else for it openly offer the solutions to the problems they've created through legislation and changes in society. And those changes in society are advancing the agenda, the secret agenda, which they don't talk about, in a way that would never happen without the problem. And if the problem is big enough and frightening enough and all the rest of it, then they can introduce changes in society with little opposition because of the problem, that would face enormous opposition. alongside that goes the totalitarian tiptoe. They work in harmony, these two techniques. And that is, you're at A, and you know you're going to Z. That's where you're going, you know that. That's your agenda.
Mm.
But if you go from A to Z in one great leap, then the change is so vast that people look up from the game shows or whatever and say, what's going on? What's going on? So you go from A to B to D to F. You make as big a leap as you can, but not so big that you attract too much opposition and too many people looking up and saying, what's going on? And that's how the European Union went from a free trade zone, nothing to worry about, just for jobs, mate, to the centralized dictatorship that it is now. And it's very close to becoming, in fact it is in everything but name, the United States of Europe, and they're going to have a European government. And the structure they want, which is affects Australia, the structure they want is that world government, world central bank structure I talked about.
Mm.
And under that, they want at least, probably more than this, but they want at least four super states. One is the European Union. They want the American Union, a European Union of the whole of the Americas, with centralized control of the whole of the Americas. They want an Asia-Pacific Union, which would encompass Australia, again, with centralization of control over economics and much of the politics. And they want, and they indeed have already got, an African Union to control the whole of Africa from a central point. And only last week I was reading that the African Union is now preparing to appoint a president of Africa, just as the European Union is preparing to appoint a president of Europe. And again, it's all about centralization of power, because the more you centralize power, the more power the few at the center have over everybody else. And because the more you centralize power, the more power you have to centralize even quicker. That's why the pace of centralization throughout the 20th century right up to now has got faster and faster, to such an extent that it's been given a name, globalization.
Mm.
And I see people of the left complaining about globalization, quite rightly, which is exploitation of the poorest people in the world with starvation wages and making your products for next to nothing. And then hello?
Yeah, hello.
Hello?
You there?
Yeah, I am now. Okay, I'll pick that up. I just got a... Hello?
Hello.
Ooh, what's... Yeah. Are you getting that on the phone?
I am. What is that?
I have no idea. Nothing's happening this end.
Oh, that's strange. It's like a little pip every now and then.
Yeah, that's right. I don't know what that is. Anyway, I'll pick that up.
Okay.
Because the more you centralize power, the more power you have centrally to centralize even quicker, the pace of centralization goes on. Actually, I'll pick it up at another point. This has now gone on so far that it's been given a name, globalization. And I see people of the left who complain about globalization, and quite right too, because it's exploiting the poorest people in the world to make the products and starvation wages, and then shipping them across the world to the richer countries and exploiting the richer countries as well to make vast profits. So I absolutely support the challenge to globalization. But what I hear from the political left around the world is it's big bad corporations who are using globalization because they want more power, therefore more wealth for themselves. But the corporations, in fact, if you go high enough in the corporations, it's a corporation singular. The corporations are not the cause of globalization, or not the engineers of globalization or originators of it. They are the vehicles for it. The originators of globalization are this network of families that I've been exposing all these years, which are behind this constant centralization of power in the world. And the thing about this whole globalization is they created organizations which I've been writing about all these years, like the World Trade Organization. And what they've done is given that power to impose massive fines on countries who try to defend their own economies from the global system. And the reason for that is to remove choice and to create dependency. You know, this is a massive part of the way this conspiracy works. It's about creating dependency. So instead of being able to run your own economy to suit your own community, you are fined if you try to do that, so you will become dependent on the world system over which you have no control, because the power running it, changing it, directing it, is outside your sphere of influence. That's what globalization and the World Trade Organization is all about. So these things are now, when you look at it from this perspective, it's just an open book what's going on in the world. But if you look at it from this side against that side, left against right, and all this stuff that political minds, how political minds see the world, then you're so focused on the twigs you can't see the forest. And the forest is that the political left, in terms of political parties around the world, and the political right, are actually controlled by the same network. And what you have in Australia, what we have in Britain, what they have here, where I am now in America, are political parties that have any chance of forming a government that are, in fact, masks on the same face. Yeah. So whether it's Bush of the so-called right that comes in, or whether it's Obama of the so-called left, they're both puppets of the same force. And interestingly, we're talking about problem, reaction, solution. Here in America, they're having a presidential version of that, because what this network did was bring in Bush to create 8 years of problems, massive economic problems, overseas wars, extended military, etc., etc. And now they've brought Obama in to offer the solutions to those problems. And Obama's going to be able to introduce things on behalf of the agenda that Bush would never have got away with, because he is perceived as seeking to find a solution to the problem of Bush. This problem action solution is playing out presidential style here, and not just America, but much of the world has been scammed by Obama, who's just as crooked and just as controlled as Bush was.
I read your piece on Obama on your webpage, which of course is davidicke.com. It's all available on the webpage. Everybody can get up there. But it was funny, even though I've read your book, been an enthusiast of your work, and like to think that I'm outside of the loop more generally than the most populace, I was reading that article, and there's a section in there about how Obama tried to get the schools to do some kind of central volunteering, create a new school.
Yeah, he's called. Pushing that through.
Do you know, I was reading that, and I got to the end of it, and I thought, oh my God, that's what my children's school did. They now, my daughter now has to do 50 hours of volunteer service to be able to graduate. And I sat back in my chair and I thought, oh my God, even me, who thinks I'm aware of stuff more generally, it wasn't until I read that article, I thought it was just a tiny piece of the puzzle. It's dressed up as we're going to teach children to be better volunteers, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
That's right.
And I read
to teach children to be better volunteers is to get them to volunteer, surely.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like now my daughter has to do 50 hours of a volunteer work to graduate, otherwise she will not graduate. And I just sat back and thought, thank you, David Icke. There was one I let slip by.
Well, that's an interesting point, because you can explain how that's possible to happen in Australia and also happen in America and happen in different places, and the same thing happening in different places around the same time.
Mm.
What they've done, for a bit of history, if people haven't come across this, there was a network of bloodlines that were considered royal bloodlines in the ancient world that have moved through history, and they have expanded, and through centralization, expanded their power as the centuries have passed. And a lot of the key bloodlines in this network come out of ancient Sumer, which became Babylon, which is now, of course, Iraq. Yes, they've gone into Iraq for oil, but there's multi reasons they went into Iraq. And one of them is that area of land, Mesopotamia, the land between two rivers, is very, very significant to them for many reasons, not least because that's where many of these key bloodlines came out of. They moved up into Europe. They were the bloodlines behind the Roman Empire, the creation of the Christian Church. And then they interbred with other elite bloodlines. through the colonialism of the world, the colonial powers of Europe, they expanded those bloodlines out into the Americas, into Asia, into Africa, into Australia, New Zealand. And then came this sleight of hand when it appeared on the surface that the colonial powers like the British Empire and the French and all the rest of it, particularly the British, of course, it was massive, they appeared to give, quote, independence to the former colonies.
Mm.
But what they did was leave out in those countries the bloodline network and representatives and the secret society network through which the bloodlines manipulate themselves and their agents into power. And they've gone on controlling those countries ever since. I'm sitting in the United States, and this country is ultimately controlled from Europe, from Britain, from London. Not the British government, that's just another pawn. I mean, the center of the secret society network, which for historical reasons and others is actually in Europe, although there are other key points around the world too, which we haven't got time to go into now in too much detail. But what then happened was that the former colonies went on their way, like Australia, believing that they were self-governing. But they weren't, this is how it works, and this is how the same things can be introduced in different parts of the world at the same time.
Mm.
What they've created, if you think of it as a transnational corporation, their headquarters, which dictates the global policy, is in Europe, London, massively. And in each country, there is what is just the same principle as a subsidiary branch of the corporation. And in each country, say Australia, there is the bloodline network left by the colonial powers, and then there is the secret society network through which those bloodlines manipulate Australia. And it's the same in America. These subsidiary groups always work the same. And the role of the subsidiary group in each country is to control that country's financial, political, media at ownership level, and educational system, and what's taught and what isn't taught, and all this, these institutions that control the country, dictate to the people, and dictate the direction. Their job is to control them, and that's what they've been, set out to do after the so-called independence. So what happens is the center of the corporation in Europe, the center of the secret society web, dictates the agenda, and it is then the subsidiary network's job to introduce that agenda in their sphere of influence, i.e. their country. So Obama's pursuing a policy now, as you very interestingly kind of reveal there, that is happening in Australia. Ultimately, that both policies originate with the same people, because there's a blueprint that they want for every country, as well as that blueprint structure of global control, which I talked about earlier. And another point to make about that, to watch in Australia, is they want to break up, they want that world government structure and the world central bank and the world army, under that the super states, the European Union, the Asia-Pacific Union, all that stuff. But under that, they don't want nation states. They want to break the nation states up into regions, because that will de-unify any unified response to the edifice of power above. So what you're going to start seeing, they've tried it in Britain already. In fact, they've already done it to a point where they've given a so-called parliament to Scotland and a parliament to Wales, and they tried to break England up into regional parliaments as well, but they couldn't quite manage it under the Blair regime.
Mm.
And in the Nixon regime in America, they actually produced a map of America broken up into regions. And the European Union have produced a map, which one of the national newspapers in Britain published. And what is it? It's breaking European countries up into regions. And not only that, different regions of Britain would be connected not to the other regions of Britain, but to other regions of other countries currently in Europe. Again, complete de-unification, therefore destroying the ability of a unified response to the diktats from above. So people just keep their eye on that, any idea of breaking Australia up, because that's what they want to take the power away from people. But how they'll sell it and how they sold the Scottish Parliament and the Welsh Parliament is devolving power to the people, going the opposite way from centralization. But of course what they're doing is giving them powers that don't really affect the way the world and the country goes, while hoarding the real power more and more at the center.
Yeah, it's very, because when you were speaking of that, my first, you know, thought as an Australian was, well, you know, I mean, you've probably heard about the bushfires and what have you over here. Australia, I believe, like no other country, pulls together. And my first thought would be, oh, I just don't think they could break the Australian people up. But having read your work and having just had heard, you know, the problem, reaction, solution, and seeing the way they do things, as you say, with the tiptoe totalitarianism, slowly and carefully and over the years, I, on the other hand, immediately think, well, you know, he probably is going to be right as well, you know. What at first seems quite shocking, and you think, oh, no, that would never happen, what we're finding with your work is 10, 20 years later, actually it did happen.
Well, what's interesting, you have to tell me about Australia, but what's happening around the world, and if you talk about this, you're called racist. It's not about being racist. It's about talking about why something's happening. The reason that the borders are coming down in Europe, so people from different countries are pouring into Britain, for instance, and there's just been protests in Britain while I've been away by British workers saying, look, hey, the jobs are going away with great rapidity, and more people are coming in to compete for jobs. What's going on? And there's been French riots and stuff like that. The borders between America and Mexico are being allowed to get looser and looser and looser, and the reason is they want people from different countries to pour into different countries because they want to break down a sense of national identity.
Mm.
Now, I'm speaking as someone who doesn't even recognize being British. I mean, I'm consciousness, like everyone else is, if we only remember.
Mm.
I'm consciousness having an experience. My body had to be born, if you like, somewhere, or I would have drowned on a piece of, I'd be on a piece of land. It happened to be Britain. But I don't mean I'm British. Being British is just my experience. It's not what I am. I'm consciousness, like everyone else. But if we're going to get streetwise about why this is being done, large numbers of people around the world have an identification with the country. Nothing wrong with that, as long as we realize it's an experience and not who we are.
Mm.
And that identification with nation, with country, with culture, is a big block on people meekly allowing their country to be destroyed and their sovereign nations to be destroyed, broken up into regions and dictated to from outside via these super states. So what they're doing is opening the borders as much as possible to allow people of other cultures to pour into these different countries, and vice versa, it goes both ways, to break down any sense of culture. There's article after article, particularly early last year in British newspapers, which were asking the question, what is it to be British anymore?
Mm.
That's the idea. Because once you lose your sense of national identity, then you're much more likely to acquiesce to the process of destroying your nation state than if you have a fiercely strong sense of national identity. And what we're seeing here with Obama here in America is, and his White House Chief of Staff, Rahm Emanuel, watch that guy like a hawk. Talk about Svengali. I mean, he out-Svengali's Svengali, this guy, and Machiavelli. They're now talking about America having to make sacrifices for the greater good, and part of that sacrifice is to give up more and more sovereignty and power to make decisions that affect their own country. And Obama's being used as the used car salesman to sell this as coming together. It's like you said, you know, with the volunteer community work. Actually, it's not volunteer community work, but it's given that feel, serving the community. But it's not saying, you know, we want to encourage you to serve the community, so you make that conscious decision to do so because you feel it's right to do so. We're going to tell you you're going to do it. And so what Obama's doing is selling the sugar as he reads his teleprompter written by someone else. That's why, you know, if you watch Obama, he almost never, ever looks directly ahead. It's always he looking to the right, then he looks to the left, then he looks to the right, then he looks to the left. And on his right and on his left are teleprompter screens where he reads the words from. That's why he keeps looking left and right. Mm. This man is just an empty suit who is there to sell the agenda. He's got nothing to do with orchestrating it or deciding it. He's just there to sell it. He's one of his sales pitches is, in effect, with the sugar, explaining it away in another way, to encourage Americans to give up sovereignty over their own country. And that's happening all over the world.
Mm. And I find it interesting what you were saying. We passed an economic stimulus package the day before America passed an economic stimulus package. And anything like in the economic stimulus package, lots of Australians are getting lots of money to, you know, spend. And anything that looks that good on the outside, I'm thinking, oh, you know, what's going on here type thing. All linked again.
Well, that's interesting. That's interesting because all that we've talked about so far can be encompassed brought into under one subject to see all parts of what we've talked about so far expressing themselves, and that's this global economic crash. It is a problem-reaction-solution on a global scale to offer the solution, which is a world central bank. Some newspapers already talking about it now. We need a world central bank. I've been saying this is the agenda for nearly 20 years, and now they've crashed the economy to bring it about. Of course, if you create massive problems with currencies all over the world, what's the solution to that? We'll have a global currency, and the simplest way to do it is to have it electronic, they'll say. And what if you want to create a massive crash, or you want to really destroy something or somebody? A, you create the problem, and B, you get them to throw every weapon they have to react to the problem at the problem, and you make sure that it has no effect on the problem. So after that's happened, you've still got the problem, but now your pockets are empty in this economic situation. There's nothing else to throw at the problem. What's left? Total economic catastrophe. That's the idea. And it's designed to for many, many things, but one of them is to completely restructure the global finance, so it's in the hands of a group of people sitting around one table somewhere in the world, and that will control the finance of every country. In Europe now, the European Central Bank controls the finance, in effect, of the whole of Europe. They just want to take that one step further and put it on a world scale. So in Australia, they're throwing all this money at it. In America, they're talking about $3 trillion in borrowed money, overwhelmingly borrowed from China, much of it to save the banks that actually created it at the highest level on purpose. And in Britain, Gordon Brown, the Prime Minister, has done the same, throwing vast amounts of money. And when it doesn't work, and it's not going to, because it's, you know, simple reason, it's not meant to. Mm. Then how are governments going to react to what's there then? They're not, and that's the idea, creating global economic catastrophe from which they can basically offer whatever solution that suits them, with the people saying, yeah, do it, please, anything, but we've got to stop this. So I've been describing recently this economic situation as like a controlled demolition of a building, where you see the charges go off, the puffs of smoke, and you know, therefore, at that point there's a problem. And clearly we can see now there's an economic problem. But the building doesn't seem, bizarrely, to fall immediately the charges go off. There's a bizarre kind of split second when the building doesn't seem to move, and then it crashes very quickly. Well, Well, in terms of this economic crash around the world, we're in that bizarre split second at the moment and getting closer to the edge all the time, because they want to crash the global economy on a scale that it would be hard to comprehend by people who've lived through the last period of ups and downs, but nothing massive like the Great Depression. And economists in America now are talking about this is going to be much worse than the Great Depression, and I agree with them absolutely. Why? Because that's what it's meant to be.
So is this when the microchipping will come in, you believe, that a disaster of this magnitude will be very easy just to microchip everybody and the electronic, you know, kind of way of life comes about?
Well, I'll tell you an interesting story. I met someone in America about 2 weeks ago. A lady must be in her 60s. And she was telling me that she lived in Arizona when I met her. But in 1970, she lived in Florida. And she banked at a branch of the Bank of America in Florida. In 1970, the bank decided that customers would have to put their thumbprint on checks. And she was outraged and made a big fuss about it, to such a point that the bank manager asked her in to his office to come and have a chat about it. And she said, we sat down, and he said to us, look, I want to put in perspective what this thumb thing is, because I want to tell you what's going to happen. And he said, what's going to happen is there's going to be an explosion of credit cards and electronic money. There's going to be the introduction of cameras in the streets and cameras by roads, and eventually a society of total surveillance. Money is going to go out of circulation, physical money, there's going to be electronic tagging of people, what we would call microchipping, and a stream of other things, he said to her. And his point was, so given that that's coming, it puts putting a thumbprint on a check in some perspective. And this lady was telling me that her and her husband have just been watching over the years since 1970 and ticking off all the things this bank manager said was going to happen, happening. And the question then was, how does he know? Well, one of two reasons. Either he's high enough in the secret society network to have access to that level that knows about this agenda and what's due to play out, or he knows someone who's told him. Because people have found it difficult to accept sometimes over the years when I've talked about how far ahead this agenda has been projected. They don't make it up by the minute or the week or the month or the year or even the decade. This goes way, way back, and it's just totalitarian tiptoe style being introduced piece by piece by piece. And what you have is the secret agenda, which has the agenda to change global society in the way we're talking about. But then alongside that, running with it, is what I call the movie. This is the movie that is given to us by the mainstream media, by education, by politicians, and all the rest of it. The vast majority of people within those groups have no idea what they're actually doing. They're just doing what they're told and don't have any reason why. But the movie is there to explain away the elements of the secret agenda as they're introduced in society, to explain them away as individual changes and individually justified because we've got to do this because of that, when actually they're all connected. And so you'll have everything. This is why I'm a dot connector. I mean, when I made my books, I massively connect dots between apparently unconnected people, ways of life, and people and economics and the whole bloody thing. And I'll be doing that in Melbourne on the April the 11th. I'm talking for 7 hours there, and I will put all these dots together. And if you don't connect the dots, then the agenda can be not seen, because it's being introduced in different elements all over society, in different subject areas and different things, but they or in them on of themselves individually explained away, when actually when you connect the dots you can see that they're all the same agenda being introduced, and the tapestry, as these individual changes take place, it starts to create a web and a tapestry of change, which now has reached the point where anyone with a modicum of free thought of their own can actually see very clearly unfolding, not only in their own countries but all over the world. The web has now reached the point where it can be seen more and more blatantly, and that's a wonderful opportunity, because the secrecy of this agenda is starting to be removed, and that gives us a chance of doing something about it.
That would have to be, excuse me, one of my most favourite things about yourself is, as you say, the connecting of the dots. Having fragments of what you've told, and you can see little things, but if you sit through one of your seminars or one of your public lectures, from the beginning to when you get to the end, it's just like the ultimate duh, you know, and I just find it so interesting the way you're able to present the whole picture, so by the time you get to the end of the lecture, you're really quite sitting there actually in a bit of shock and going, wow, you know, because you've seen everything.
The thing is that the more that I travel this journey and the more that I understand, the simpler it gets, and the simpler you can explain it to people. And it's funny because, when I first started on this journey 20 years ago, the whole synchronicity of my life was about the five sense, if you like, the daily experience level of this conspiracy, which we've talked about so far today. But then from about the late 90s, maybe about 98, it started moving into other deeper areas. And from 2003 particularly, right up to the present day, and I'm getting deeper and deeper and deeper into this now, the synchronicity of my life has taken me into the nature of reality itself. Who are we? What is this world? How do we create it? How do we interact with it? And it's absolutely stunning, mind-blowing stuff. And it's in this area of the nature of reality, who are we, where are we, what are we doing here, that actually the key lies to bring an end to this playground nonsense that this controlling network of families are involved in. Because the secret society network at the highest level, not Bill and Joe down the Freemasons Lodge, but at the highest level, in the real secretive, exclusive groupings, they have passed over through the, not just the years, but the centuries, it goes back a long, long time, advanced knowledge about the nature of this reality and how we interact with it, and who we are, what the body really is, to the chosen people. And at the same time, and again, we can see this with the colonial powers. It was another part of the reason for colonizing the world at that point from Europe. When the colonial powers went into countries to take them over, they targeted the native knowledge that had been passed over verbally and in other means through the centuries in Africa and Asia and South America and Australia, of course, with the Aborigines. And the idea was to take that knowledge as much as possible out of circulation, because it carried a lot of understanding of the nature of reality and also the real history. And as they took that understanding out and replaced it with religion, bricks and mortars, mortar religion, and replaced the history carried by the native peoples from generation to generation with an imposed, centralized, decided history of the world, which of course is always written by the winners in wars, etc. What they did was suck knowledge out of circulation about reality and true history and all the rest of it. So they put themselves in an even greater position of power by hoarding that knowledge in the upper levels of the secret society network. And one of the key areas that they don't want, or a massively fundamental key area that they don't want us to understand, is that this physical world is an illusion. And the only place it exists in the apparently physical world outside of us is actually in our heads, in our brains. It's the same principle as the internet, where if if you have a computer in Australia or South Africa or London or America, you log into the same collective reality, and you then decide if you want to go to this website or that website, and what you think of it and what you don't think of it, and someone else going to the same website will think something different. So we have a unique spin on this collective reality, but actually it's the same collective reality. And we as consciousness connect into the virtual reality through the what I call the body computer, because the body's a biological computer. If you look at the computers, of course it's fantastically more advanced, but if you look at the principles of a computer and the principles of the body, it ticks every box. And you know, in the Matrix movie, there was that great line where the Neo character says, "This isn't real," and the Morpheus guy says, "What is real? If you're talking about what you can see, touch, taste, smell, etc., then real is just electrical signals interpreted by your brain. That's exactly what it is."
Mm.
The five senses decode vibrational information, including the eyes. They decode what we call light. They turn it into electrical signals. They send that information to the brain, and the brain constructs holographic, apparently three-dimensional reality, which we experience as outside of us, but actually only exists in our head. Now, this is not me sitting in a darkened room coming to these conclusions. This is scientific fact, proven scientific fact. It's just that they don't want to broadcast this, because suddenly we start to realize that the world we thought we lived in is very different to the world that we actually live in, which actually lives in us. It's within us. And if you are a few people who understand what reality is, and you understand that we are decoding reality like a computer is decoding the internet. Now, if you can program the computer, like they do in China, for instance, to only decode that part of the internet that suits the authorities and stops people in China accessing those parts of the internet the authorities don't want them to know about or the information they don't want them to see, then the principle is exactly the same. The body computer is programmed through words, which are vibrations, which we call the media, which we call education. And once you get one or two generations programmed to see the world in a certain way, you want them to see it, then their children will be brought up in families where their parents, etc., will program them, not through malevolence, but because that's how they think it is.
Mm.
And eventually you get billions of people, and this happened a long time ago now, billions of people who take on fake identities. They believe that the reflection that they see in the mirror is them, when it's the vehicle that their consciousness is using to experience this reality. They think the world is outside of them, when actually it only exists in their head as a holographic construct. And if you can manipulate the way that we decode reality to suit your agenda, then you can, in the hands of a few, control billions of people. And the way they want us to decode reality is with a sense of limitation, with a sense of I can't, with a sense of little me, and a sense of I have no control over my life.
Mm.
And they've done it brilliantly. And when you start to awaken and you start to become conscious, you move your point of observation from in this world to beyond this virtual reality universe. And you start to look in from outside as your point of observation, and you start suddenly to see things you couldn't possibly see before. And that's when people start to realize the scale, the staggering scale on which they've been had. And this is happening to more and more people now, and this is greatly encouraging, because the more people awaken to the nature of the world we really live in and the nature of the infinite consciousness we really are, then this manipulation can't continue, because it depends absolutely and totally on humanity being in an amnesic sleep in which they understanding who they are, where they are, and the nature of the reality they're experiencing.
So people who are awakening, who, you know, they want to rage against the machine, that they made a conscious decision to change. What I find talking to people is, you know, you can understand your work and you can see the world now from that different point of observation. But then I think some people, and I've experienced this myself, get overwhelmed with, my God, what can I, at every turn you feel like, how can I make a significant change in a very practical day-to-day level? How can I make a significant change and help with that awakening? What would you say to those people, David?
Well, it's very clear to me now, as I've gone deeper and deeper, and I'm still going deeper and deeper all the time into this nature of reality, that what we call mind, where we talk about his mind, her mind, their mind, I don't see it like that at all. I think we're talking about the mind. Within this virtual reality, where we're decoding vibrational information into electrical signals, into holographic, apparently physical things that actually only exist in that form in your head, when you look at the mind is part of that construct, and it's the way that consciousness connects. It's the conduit mind, the conduit that allows consciousness to lock in and experience this reality, and mind works through the body computer. But mind, because it's part of this illusory construct, and the way the construct is programmed, it sees everything as apart from everything else. It sees everything in terms of limitation, and I can't, and all the rest of it. And if we stay in mind, and you can be in mind while thinking the spiritual, I mean, all these religions, Christianity, Islam, Judaism, Hinduism, that they're all, you know, apart from the rare people, they're all mind constructs. And the New Age is a mind construct that thinks it's spiritual. And you know when you're in mind, because mind is obsessed with hierarchy, hierarchical structures. It's obsessed with structure itself. It's obsessed with rules, regulations, and laws all over the place. And it's obsessed with a sense of limitation. So if you are seeing the world in any of those forms, then you're in mind. And that's, you know, we're all in mind to an extent, because that's the conduit that allows consciousness to experience this virtual reality. The question is, are you totally controlled by mind in terms of your perception, or is mind the servant of consciousness, or is it the is it taken over so consciousness can no longer have a major impact on your perception processes? If we can break away from mind perception being the dominating force, then what's left is consciousness. It's not even about becoming conscious. It's about removing that which has disconnected us from an awareness of our consciousness. And once you start to become conscious, consciousness knows the best contribution that you can make. And you see it. You see it clearly once you become conscious. But mind is part of this construct, and therefore it's trying to defend the construct. So it will constantly give you a list of things to tell you why you're powerless, why there's nothing you can do, why there's no point, because these people are all too powerful and all the rest of it, because it wants you to do nothing. One of the things I say in my talks is, if we want to become conscious, therefore, if you like, symbolically get to the top of the mountain and look down on it instead of being caught in it wondering bewilderedly where we are and what we are, then we need to come from a perspective of consciousness. And one of the things I say is, if you're faced with a situation at any time during the day, as our life experience passes by, we need to ask ourselves, what would consciousness do? Now, consciousness is all possibility. It's all that is, has been, ever will be, and it's a very hard thing for the mind to understand, because it's all about division and limitation. But consciousness is the infinite, it's the eternal, it's that which leaves the body in a near death experience, etc., or at least can be. And if we come from its perspective, mind would do is say, what can I do to get most benefit for me, or least hassle for me out of this situation? And, you know, if we did one thing, just one thing alone, all of us, if when we're faced with choices all day, every day, we did what we knew to be right by that situation and everyone involved in it, rather than what is right for us in the moment, as in our perception, the world would change. Because by taking that course, I am going to do what is right, fair, and just, you lock into consciousness and you pull out of mind, because mind is only looking after itself because it sees everything as apart from everything else. It's mind that wants to compete with everybody to get to the top of the greasy pole. Consciousness doesn't do that. It knows it's everything. It is the greasy pole, and it's everything that wants to get to the top of it. So what is the point of competing? You know, it just is, and it's a completely different way of perceiving the world. But if we don't become conscious, then, and we play in the realm only of mind, like you can talk about a closed auric field. You know, you've got the body, and then you've got the auric field, works through the body. Well, if your auric field is open, and what do we talk about? People with open minds and closed minds. When you open your mind to all possibility, it's like Socrates, the ancient Greek philosopher, is supposed to have said, wisdom is knowing how little we know. That keeps your mind always open to all possibilities. Doesn't mean you believe anything, but you're open to possibility. You don't just reject something because it's different to your belief system. So when you open your auric field by opening your mind to all possibility, you're opening to allow consciousness in. When you close your auric field, because you've got a closed mind, a rigid belief system, that closes your auric field big time fast. Because when you've got a rigid belief system, like a religion that thinks it's got all the answers and the religion's got all the answers, then your auric field's going to close, your mind's going to close to consciousness, because it doesn't think it's got anything else to open up to, because it's got all the answers between two covers. And it's the same in all these rigid belief systems, whether they be political, economic, or whatever. They close the auric field because they close the mind. They're one and the same. People all over the world are caught in these closed auric fields, what I call the eggshell. And if you're not opening to a higher level of perception to get a fix on who you are and where you are and all the rest of it, then with a closed auric field, you look the other way. You look out through the five senses, trying to get a fix on who you are, where you are, and what's happening in the world, and what information comes back to the five senses. That which is broadcast by the media, that which you get through the ludicrously named education system, and all the sources of information of the system in general. So what the kind of the process is of this conspiracy, this manipulation, is to close people's minds, close people's hearts massively, because that's our real connection to consciousness, opening the heart. And once you close the auric field, not least through fear, that does it big time fast as well, and stress and low vibrational emotion, you then have isolated the body computer and the auric field from its infinite self, and then you program through the five senses the version of perception you want them to believe. And you turn infinite consciousness by doing this into a herd of freaking sheep. Mm. What's the key thing about a herd of sheep? One shepherd and a sheepdog or two, the sheepdog symbolizing fear and the shepherd symbolizing authority, can control vast numbers of sheep. And if those sheep refuse to bow to that, refuse to bow to fear, refuse to bow to authority, and just went off in their own direction, they would be uncontrollable from any central point. Sheep are controllable because they bow to the authority of the shepherd and the fear of the sheepdog. That is so symbolic of how the human herd, because that's what we've become, but we don't have to be, has reached this point of control, except we've out-sheep the sheep, because at least the sheep need a sheepdog to frighten them into line. The human herd polices itself, sheepdogs itself, by jumping on anyone who tries to break out of the norm with their view, with their lifestyle. It's like they say in Japan, apparently it's a national phrase I found when I went there, don't be the nail that stands out above the rest, because that's the first one to get hit. That's how they control us and manipulate us and hasslers and ridiculers and frighten us into line. And 20 years ago, I decided I wasn't going to bow to that. I wasn't going to have it. And it's amazing what you can achieve when you refuse to bow to that intimidation. Because it's like sitting in a dental room, terrified of a dentist, and you've been terrified for weeks since the appointment was made. And then you go into the dentist, and he looks around and prods a bit, and then you leave, and you think, whoa, that was fine. That wasn't a problem, except for 3 months or whatever it is. You've been constantly worrying about that appointment, and it was fine. And I can say from my own experience that speaking your truth, expressing your uniqueness, refusing to bow to the sheep mentality, refusing to be a clone, refusing to be what someone else told you you must be, is much seems much more difficult when you're thinking about doing it than it is when you actually do it. And we're in a situation now, 20 years ago, crikey, it was much more difficult. But now we're in a situation where more and more people are waking up, more and more people want to break out of the herd, and it's much easier now. I'm not saying it's easy, but much easier because there are more people you can connect with who are awakening to the same perception.
I was just thinking, actually, as you were talking, then a small example from my personal experience is I decided I wouldn't immunize my children. Now, the way Australia gets you is once you immunize your children, then you get a $7,000 baby bonus. Because a lot of parents just think, oh, well, immunize, And so I thought, well, basically, I don't care. I'm going to give up the $7,000 baby bonus. But it's funny. I was thinking the way the consciousness supports you is I didn't get my child immunized. I had 3 letters sent to me from the government telling me, was I aware my child wasn't immunized, blah, 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 blah. And I happened to go to a GP one day about something else. And I was telling her about the fact that I hadn't had my daughter immunized, and she said, do you know, if you lodge a conscientious objection, you can still get that money. And I said, I beg your pardon? And she said, if I write you something that says, I as a doctor verify this parent has lodged a conscientious objection to immunizations, you can lodge that and you still get that money. And I said, is that right? And I did that, and I did get that baby bonus money, and now I tell everybody, you don't have to have your kids immunized. Oh, and by the way, if you lodge a conscientious objection, you still get your $7,000. And that, to me, was the way that consciousness, once I stepped out of the programming and stepped out of the fear, said, you know what, I'm still going to support you. So that
it's amazing what you can achieve. My son now, he's 16, he's 6'4", looks down on me, and he's never had a vaccination in his life, never had a childhood disease either. Mm. Not that it's a bad thing to have childhood diseases, because it kickstarts the immune system. Mm. And this is an interesting point, vaccines, because you have to put them together with food additives, drink additives, and all these chemical concoctions. And again, it's understanding the nature of reality and how we interact with it. That's the point where you can understand so many things that happen in the world from a much greater perspective. The body computer is a electrochemical organism, and it's also a crystal. It's a liquid crystal, and people don't realize that we have trillions and trillions and trillions of cells, and the membrane of every cell is crystalline. It's a crystal, and DNA is crystalline. We are crystals because we receive transmitters. That's what the body is. And if you are receiving, transmitting, and decoding to your full potential and full sharpness and clarity, then you can see things, perceive things that other people can't see. So part of the conspiracy, key part, is not just to program the computer with a sense of reality. It's also to destabilize it chemically and electrically, so that it's not a receiver-transmitter of the potential that it should be.
Mm.
And, of course, when we take in chemical concoctions, it destabilizes the body's chemical system, which is connected fundamentally to the electrical system. If the electrical system is imbalanced, so is the chemical system, and vice versa. And these electromagnetic fields and soups that we now live in, mobile phones and all the rest of it, the microwaves, they are also destabilizing the body computer electrical system so that it doesn't decode with clarity and the sharpness that it could. And I'm sure it must be getting on that way, if not the same way in Australia, but in America and Britain is now 25 vaccinations before the age of two.
Mm.
And this is attacking with horrible poisons the human immune system. And the human immune system is the body computer's far more, staggeringly more advanced version of Norton antivirus in a computer.
Mm.
It's there to seek out the threats to the body computer and to either isolate them so they can do no harm or destroy them. And the more powerful the immune system is, the healthier you are, because any threats, and with, you know, of course, the body's coming under chemical, viral, electrical threat all the time, is sorted out by the immune system. But what you're doing with children is you're bombarding a developing, still not fully developed in terms of the age of two, nothing like fully developed immune system,
mm.
With all these chemical poison concoctions, and basically you're devastating it, which opens children up in, as their lives unfold, to getting illnesses and attacks, getting through to harm the body that the human immune system would normally sort out. This is what's happening. I mean, you know, I have this thing, this phrase I say, take a deep breath, take a step back, look at it again. We get so close to things that we only see them in myopia. We don't see them in terms of what we're actually looking at in terms of the big picture, the forest, instead of the twigs. And so what we're looking at in terms of the human immune system and vaccinations is destroying the body's defense mechanisms at a very early age, opening up the body as the life unfolds to endless attacks, not just physical but mental and emotional attacks that would normally be sorted out. It's all a process of destabilizing us so that we're isolated in mind and isolated in a fraction, even of this virtual reality universe, in terms of our perception.
Yes. It's very uplifting when you explain stuff like that and you understand it, but when you can actually have somebody verbalize your thoughts, it's very inspiring. And I just hope everybody who comes to see you in Melbourne on April the 11th, which is the Easter weekend, and I know five people from the West are flying out there, I'm sure there's many more. Over 1,200 tickets have already been sold to this, people, so if you do want to see David, you better get up to the Truth Movement Australia's website and book your ticket. You've been very generous with your time, David, but I just wanted to ask you a couple more things, if that's all right.
No problem, yeah.
Now, it seems to be a bit of an intensity happening at the moment, perhaps from the global elites side. Is that just because I'm noticing it more, or is there, it seems to be like it's all been arced up?
It's moving on fast.
Yeah.
Going back to what I said earlier, the more you centralize power, the more power you have to centralize even quicker. And this process of gathering power in the hands of fewer and fewer people, agents and absolutely direct representatives of this bloodline family network, is getting more and more centralized all the time. And therefore, they're able to have more power to introduce more and more of their agenda quicker and quicker and quicker. And it is unfolding faster and faster. But, you know, I can say from my own experience, because when I kind of woke up 20 years ago, it was a lonely place.
Mm.
And there seemed to be no evidence that any kind of mass awakening was going to happen. Well, all this time later, I travel all over the world all the time. All over the world, this is happening, and on a tremendously gathering scale. And so, although the conspiracy and its progress is what is reported in the media, as people who are aware of it see the different parts of the agenda unfolding and being introduced through legislation, of course, the media are not reporting or even acknowledging the existence of this awakening. And I can tell you, it's getting more and more and more powerful and expanding all the time. And, you know, these are not just challenging times, they're very exciting times, because we're at the fork in the road where we're now faced with a choice to follow the mind paradigm, this whole construct will collapse because it's based on us not being conscious. And it may seem trite and may seem simplistic, we just must become conscious, but everything comes from that, you know. I mean, it's like if you're in a darkened room and there's things you want to do in that darkened room but you can't see to do them, then fundamental to everything you want to do is turning the light on so you can bloody see.
Yeah.
And then you can start to do what you want to do. In other words, turning the light on is fundamental to everything else that you want to do in that room. Becoming conscious is turning the light on in those terms. And once we turn the light on, then we are able to do all the things we'd like to do. But mind is getting in the way of it at the moment when it dominates our perception.
So on a positive note, perhaps as more and more people are awakening, the global elite is having to push forward its scale of things because they're trying to perhaps match the awakening that's happening, if you know what I mean. I'm trying to put like a positive spin on this so that if people see stuff going out of control, perhaps that's only matched because more and more people are awakening and the global elite are thinking, we have to do this at a much faster scale now if we're going to meet our agenda, because the awakening is catching up.
Well, again, you know, if we were starting this interview now, I could talk for the same amount of time about, you know, the points you're bringing up. You know, I can tell you from my life, since I started to wake up, going back very, very right to the start of it, that I learned in those early days, for reasons we don't have time to go into now, that that there was a vibrational change coming, which would change the way that people saw the world, which would in fact be a vibrational alarm clock that was going to wake up people from their amnesia. Now at that time when I learned about this in 1990, there appeared to be absolutely no evidence, and there wasn't, that this was going to happen. Now the evidence is overwhelming, and it's clear to me that this network of families understood that this vibrational change was coming, and they are in the process now, not even trying to get more control, if you like, but they're trying with all this surveillance and all the Orwellian state and all the centralization of power and the microchipping to keep the lid down on this awakening so that this vibrational change does not open the minds to consciousness of vast numbers of people. They're trying to mitigate the thing. This is not, I was doing an interview earlier today, this is not, I would suggest, a, if you like, proactive thing of imposing more power, although it's partly that. It's actually more a defensive mechanism, what we're seeing, to stop this awakening, because as people become conscious in vast numbers, their control is gone. They're trying to hang on to it, because the real power is with us, because if we become conscious on the numbers that we have here, or at least large numbers, not everyone has to be to bring this about, then their deal's over, and they know that, and that's why they're literally panicking and running around trying to introduce this agenda as fast as they possibly can to stop this lid coming off. And I'm absolutely convinced, although this control system's going to go forward for a while yet, it really is, and we're going to think, oh, crikey, there's no way out of this. But ultimately, it's coming down, and it's coming down when people become conscious in large enough numbers to stop holding the house of cards together, because that's what we're doing. Through the domination of our minds and the perception of our minds of limitation and I can't and little me and all the rest of it, we're holding the house of cards together. When we become conscious and we step out from the house of cards, the house of cards just collapses because we're holding it together. This conspiracy cannot control us unless we acquiesce to it. We're at a time now when that's the choice in the fork in the road. Are we going to acquiesce to this control and allow a few people, a shepherd and a sheepdog, to dominate a whole herd of sheep? Or are we going to go our own way, express our uniqueness, refuse to comply and cooperate with our own enslavement? And if we do that, then the conspiracy has got nowhere to go, because without our compliance, without our acquiescence en masse to their agenda cannot control us.
Yeah, talking about deadlines and world authorities. My husband John, through research that he's done, and he's an American and coming out of America as well and being able to look back, he believes that America was designed for only a limited amount, a specific amount of time. It was designed to reach an agenda. In other words, it was not meant to go on. It's due to fall. Its time is up. Would you agree with that?
Well, that's the agenda. There's no doubt about it. I mean, I've been talking now for quite some time about what I call using America to destroy America.
Mm.
See, as we said earlier in the chat, the British Empire created what we call the United States through colonization, and then when apparently giving it independence and withdrawing, left their bloodline family network and their agents and the secret society network out here, and they've gone on controlling this country ever since from Europe, while America thinks it's the freest country in the world. I always have to smile when I see how many times Americans have to be told they live in the freest country in the world. If I lived in the freest country in the world, I wouldn't surely need to be told about it. It would be obvious.
Mm.
This is actually one of the most controlled countries outside the communist world I've ever been in. It's not the most controlled. It's just staggering.
Mm.
Again, going back to what was said about Bush coming in for 8 years of the problem and now Obama coming in to offer the used car solutions, this is all part of what your husband's talking about. The idea is to destroy America, and also actually to destroy any other, even close to superpower in the world, for this reason. If you want a world government structure, which is a global dictatorship, you cannot have a global dictatorship if there are countries, quote, superpowers, that have the financial and military might to say no to your diktats, to your impositions. So if to have total global control, you have to remove the superpowers. And America, of course, is the biggest and the classic. And what they're doing now is destroying it financially. I'm not kidding you, Leah. I'm in Arizona, which is suffering the third most foreclosures and people losing their homes in any other state in America, California being the biggest. And this country... I don't know about Australia, obviously, you know better, much better than me than that. But in America, this country is facing economic catastrophe. Catastrophe. Mm. And again, you know, the building hasn't fallen yet. They've got the military expeditions abroad, which have squeezed it militarily and, again, sucked it dry financially. Using America to run the wars of conquest on behalf of this, an occupation on behalf of this network of families, they're also using it, but also destroying it. That's the idea, and the idea is to destroy America. And the man behind Barack Obama, the chief mentor, is a man called Zbigniew Brzezinski, the former national security advisor to Jimmy Carter. And this man, if you read his books, going right back to 1970, and then you look at society as it is and what he wrote in terms of what society was going to become, they're mirrors of each other. Why? Because Brzezinski is a massive insider. One of the Illuminati family organizations is called the Trilateral Commission. And Brzezinski co-founded it with David Rockefeller in 1972-73. And he's the mentor of Barack Obama, who's supposed to be coming in as an independent mind to bring about change. I mean, sides are splitting. Brzezinski has this fierce, almost genetic hatred of Russia. He wants a conflict with Russia. He wants to introduce a conflict, to manipulate a conflict with China and between China and Russia. And so we are looking at some real challenging times here for America, and all together that they're designed to destroy it. That's the idea. Your husband is absolutely right.
Mm. One of the ways the mainstream media attacks you is they take a snippet of your work, which of course is the shape-shifting reptilians, and then they use that against you. I know you must be so over that by now, because anybody who's read your work realizes that it's not just something, as you say, you sat in the dark and thought, I think I'll say they're all, you know, shape-shifting reptilians. It goes back to early civilization, to Sumer, and to places like that. Are you gathering more and more evidence about this reptilian race?
Well, yeah, I mean, once you put your head up above the parapet and you talk about it, then, you know, you become a magnet for people giving you information because they thought, crikey, I had no one to tell, so...
Well, who would you tell, really? Yeah. You know, even
exactly.
If...
but, you know, when I say that fundamental to both understanding what's going on in the world and finding the key to change it is understanding the nature of reality, well, there's nothing more... more blatantly an example of that than shape-shifting.
Mm.
You see, when you talk about how people and very large numbers all over the world have told me how they've seen people overwhelmingly in positions of power, but not always, shift in from a human form into a reptilian form and back again, people immediately and understandably go through this thought process. The world is solid, the world is physical, and therefore it's impossible to shift from a solid form to a solid form and back again. Hey, I agree, of course it is, but that's not what's happening. The only place that this physical world, so-called solid world, and of course it's not solid as quantum physics has shown, they say that this world is made of atoms, but atoms have no solidity, they're empty, they're just packets of energy. And there's this bewilderment in science of how can a physical solid world be made up of atoms that have no solidity. Answer, it isn't. It's an illusion. It's just part of the decoding process of the brain that they're picking up. And so what the prime reality is a vibrational construct. I'll give you an example of what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
There was a book called The Holographic Universe written by a guy called Michael Talbot.
Mm-hmm.
And he told the story in there, and it is a holographic universe. That's what the virtual reality universe is constructed as, holograms, which are what? Apparently three-dimensional forms, but actually have no solidity, even though they appear to have when you look at them. And he told the story in there of his father, who had a party and had a stage hypnotist along to do party tricks. And he had this guy called Tom sitting in a chair. And as he was finishing his little tricks with him, and, you know, like getting him to eat a potato but think it was an apple.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that? What you do as the hypnotist is you program the brain to decode the electrical signals coming from the taste senses into a taste of an apple instead of, as you normally would, the taste of a potato. So the taste of the apple, of the potato rather, leaves the taste senses as an electrical signal, goes to the brain, and the brain, because it's been programmed, just like a computer, it can be programmed to read software in certain ways, it now reads that not as a potato, but as an apple. That's how it's done. That's how all this trickery is done.
Mm.
And so what they did with this Tom guy was put him in a chair, and then as the thing was coming to an end, the hypnotist said to him, when I bring you back to a waking state, you're not going to be able to see your daughter in the room. At which point, the hypnotist put the daughter right in front of her father. So he's sitting down, he's looking into her belly. He brings him apparently to a waking state, and he says, can you see your daughter, Tom? Tom looks around, looking in her belly, but he looks around, he says, no, she's not here. The hypnotist goes behind the daughter and puts his hand in the small of her back. And says, Tom, I'm holding something. What am I holding? And Tom looked bewildered because it was obvious to him. It's right in front of him. He says, a watch. He says, an inscription on the watch. Can you read it? He peered forward. He read the inscription. Between him and the watch was his daughter.
Wow.
Now, this would be perceived to be impossible, but it's not, for this reason. His daughter's prime state, like your prime state and my prime state and the whole reality's prime state, is a vibrational construct, energy. And what the brain does is read that energy into a holographic construct that only exists in the brain, in the same way that a computer reads a software disk and puts onto the screen as graphics, pictures, colors, what is on the screen, just information. You know, you pick up a computer disk, you can't see any colors or graphics or words. It's all encoded information, and you put it in the computer. The computer reads that and reads it into what you see on the screen. Same with the television. It's reading is on the screen. That's what the brain's doing in a far, far more sophisticated way. So the reason I say all this in relation to shape-shifting is, what is shape-shifting? Shape-shifting is the brain reading an energetic field. An energetic field, a fluid energetic field, not a solid body. There are no solid bodies. And it reads an energetic field that is carries the human encoding, and it sees a human body. And if that energetic field shifts, not from solid to solid, just shifts energetically, the brain starts reading new information, which is the encoded reptilian information.
Mm.
And then if the human energy field shifts back, it starts reading that information. And in the perception in the brain, the perception is of seeing someone go from human to reptilian to human again. It's not that shape-shifting is not solid to solid. It's energetic field being read to another energetic field being read. That's what it is. And it's the shape-shifting, the only place shape-shifting takes place, quote, physically, is in the decoding system in the brain.
Yeah.
So once you start to understand this, and of course journalists don't understand this, they think, he's saying people change from humans to reptilians, he's meant. just as people once said, he's saying the Earth's round, everyone knows it's flat and all this stuff, you know.
Mm.
And so understanding reality and how it works starts to explain so many so-called mysteries, so much of the so-called paranormal, in ways that are perfectly straightforward and logical, but only if you have enough information to have that perception. For instance, when they said the Earth was round, people's level of knowledge was not to include or did not include the law of gravity. So immediately they said, well, people would fall off the bottom. That's ridiculous. How can that be?
Mm.
But once you introduce the law of gravity, suddenly you realize how the world can be a sphere without people falling off the bottom.
Mm.
And if you therefore suppress information about the nature of reality, which is what this network of families has done for hundreds of years and more, then you're putting humanity into such a low level of understanding of reality that they write off paranormal things and shape-shifting and many other things as impossible. Not because they are impossible, but because the level of knowledge they have of reality and possibility and potential makes them appear to be impossible.
Mm.
And that's how they entrap people in the prisons of the mind and the little boxes.
Mm, very well said. It's all about waking up people. David, you said you were working on another book. What's that book?
It's a book going deep, deep, deep into reality, what it is, how we interact with it, and crucially, how we can turn the key to turn this prison into the paradise it can be,
and
I'm sure ultimately will be.
And when can people get that book? When will it be available?
Well, I'm in the process of writing it, and next year sometime.
So from prison to paradise.
Early, I hope.
Prison to paradise.
Again?
Prison to paradise. Is
yeah,
that
well, that's not the name of the book, but that's the theme of it.
Yeah, great, great. David will be in Melbourne on April the 11th, which is the Easter weekend, at the Melbourne Convention Centre. Truth Movement Australia is bringing him here. It's about a 6-7 hour all-day thing, I would imagine, is it, David?
Yes, it is. I do it in three chunks, and there's about 1,000 illustrations, and it's so long because I'm connecting dots. I don't, you know, stick on one subject for 7 hours. There's
yeah.
an enormous amount of dots, and the longer it goes on and the dots connect, the picture starts to become clear, and it's a very different one to the one the authorities want you to see.
I can't emphasize that enough. That's what I was saying earlier in our chat, that by the end of it, you actually sit there in a little bit of shock, and you go, wow. You know, when you have it presented like that, all the dots really do come together and you see a completely different picture. You see different programming, and it's quite an amazing thing to be a part of. So get along and see David at the Melbourne Convention Centre, April the 11th. Truth Movement Australia is bringing him here. All the information about where to get your tickets, and there are over 1,200 already sold, is available off Ghost Radio's webpage. David's website is also there. You can go on the forums, you can purchase his books, you can see where else he's going to be around the world because he's constantly travelling. Get along and see him. I can't begin to tell you the huge pleasure I've had from being able to chat with you tonight, David. I've wanted to for a very long time.
A pleasure, Leah. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay, that's Underworld for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. Stay safe and blessings to you all.
You've been listening to Australia's own Underworld Show with host Leah Ramsey. The Underworld Show is produced in Perth, Western Australia by iProdigy Communications exclusively from Ghost Radio Australia and the Ghost Radio Network. Tune in every Sunday at 8 p.m. Perth time to hear fascinating guests and topics such as the one you just listened to. For more information on upcoming guests, events, and breaking news, visit www.underworldshow.com or www.ghostradio.com.au.